guys, I'm Heather, and I'm the oldest. She's the emotional one.
Gonna hurt. Do not
like
puke
I don't
on my
know
carpet.
If anybody's trying to get it to come out here or here.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and all of his carpenter friends.
Hey guys, I'm Ben. I'm the middle child.
And he's the practical one.
Okay. Oh, what am I gonna say though?
Now y'all made me nervous.
It's going to be a time,
isn't it? I'm a sensitive boy.
I'm Beth, and I'm the baby.
She's also the swing vote.
I've been hit! I got the little frilly socks and everything.
Together, we make the Music List Podcast. And welcome back to the Music List Podcast. My name is Ben. With me are my sisters Heather and Beth. We are siblings that argue while making music lists. That's the shtick. That's what we do. And we are now headlong into the holiday season. And as a service, we want to help your shopping. We want to help you find some wonderful music out there for the music lovers in your life. Maybe there's some genres that they're wanting to dig into. I think we will probably hit a little bit of everything today, just knowing the three of us. And so it's going to be a little different than what we normally do. What we normally do is we bicker and argue about certain things, and then we try to decide what's the best and what's the fifth best, basically. And then what's none of that. Cut them all out. But today, what we're trying to do is we're just going to give you 15 albums that are really, really good albums from the first track to the last track. We kind of call it no skip albums. I've got one on my list that's got 28 tracks on it, so I'm sure one of them may not be very good, great gift ideas for people that enjoy music, and or you know, maybe you just want to go out and do something nice for yourself too for Christmas. You can do that.
Treat yourself.
Yeah. So it's going to be a little different. We're just going to go round robin today. We're going to share five albums a piece, and we also would invite you, if you go back a year ago this time. We did this same episode, and we're not going to repeat any of those albums. So there's actually, if you listen to this episode and the one from last year, you'd have 30 great albums to choose from. So I honestly, right offhand, don't know that I remember who's supposed to pick first. Heather's supposed to pick first.
Yeah.
Heather. So the rotation will go Heather, Beth, and Ben, and then you'll just always draft first. It'll be Heather, okay. Beth, Ben, Heather, Beth, Ben, Heather, Beth, Ben, Heather, Beth, Ben.
Okay.
Until we go through five times.
Yeah. Shall I begin?
Yeah. So okay. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yep. All right.
now go to Amazon and start making your wish list.
Yes. Okay, so my selections are kind of all over the place, genre-wise, maybe. But, I mean, there's not a country album in here because that's not really my jam. But I like a good country album, but I'm not picking one. But, and also, I'm old. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's facts. But that being said, my first choice is not an old album. It's a couple of years old, but it is The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess by Chappell Roan.
Say I'm jealous, but my king is watching you.
it. So, this is, I think, 14 tracks. I really like Chapel Rome because, you know, I grew up in with that 80s pop, lots of really great female pop artists, and this is kind of a callback to that. She kind of brings that 80s pop feel back around. It's edgy. It's there's a lot of diversity of style, I think, on the album. It's not for the young children in your on your list, just because right. It is current. It is not child friendly.
Nope.
So keep that in mind. Just because she is a current pop star, that does not always mean that it is for the younger listeners. But if you really enjoy that 80s, that pop sensibility, but you want something that is more current, I highly recommend it. I dig it. I we said no skips, and I can listen to this top to bottom,
yeah,
and enjoy everything. So,
yeah.
All right. So what's the name of the it's give us the title of
the Rise album. And Fall of a Midwest Princess.
Okay.
Yeah. I agree. It's good. And I'm going to kind of go in the same vein. 2024 Short and Sweet by yep. Sabrina Carpenter.
It's a good one.
Oh, I love this song.
Judgment. I know I have good taste. It's funny and it's ironic that only I feel that way. I promise them that you're different, and everyone makes mistakes, but just don't. I heard that you're an actor, so act like a stand-up guy. Whatever devil's inside you, don't let him out tonight. I tell them it's just your culture, and everyone rolls their eyes. Yeah, I know. All I'm asking, baby, please, 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 don't prove I'm right.
The one I thought that I sent. I'm glad you were on top of it, because I was like, oh, I sent him a clean version. I guess I did not, because in the one I thought I sent, she says little sucker. And
little
I like,
sucker,
except
yeah.
She didn't say little sucker.
You know why he knows that? Because I was listening to it in the car one time, and he comes up just as that line. He's yeah. like... So I roll down the window and it gets, don't yeah. embarrass me. And you're like, yeah. What did she just say?
She said yeah. what you,
she said what she said.
So yes, this is not safe for work nope. or the kids. So it's 12 songs, but only about 36 minutes long. So there's not a lot of filler. They are short and sweet. Some of the biggest hits of the last year came off this album. Please, 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 Espresso, just got infectious, catchy stuff. And she's got a really good voice. She and Chapel Roan have a really good, clear, high register. And one thing you need to know, and I thought, here's the thing. On my picks, all five of them, you know, we talked about being turkeys the last time that we gathered together. And... I thought, you know what? I'm going to be a turkey. And all of the gifts that I'm going to give on this episode can be slightly offensive depending on who you're giving it to. And so somebody may not like it. They may be a controversial figure. So that's a theme with mine here. And a lot of people, Sabrina Carpenter gets the surprise, like, oh my goodness, she's, you know, because she's a cute, you know,
little tiny girl.
I mean, she's a grown woman, right? But like, yeah.
she's 4'11" though.
She's quite small, short and sweet. And, but this is not safe for the children. She likes to talk about her affinity for wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Wink. And then, but she twists genres. Like, she has a lot of, this is obviously pop, but she has a lot of country twang to her voice sometimes, and especially in some other songs. And it's kind of interesting. I don't know where she's from, but that is definitely an influence for her, country music. She has, so if you know someone who likes female singers, female singer-songwriters, they have a good sense of humor. She's very witty. She has a lot of clever lyrics, and they are not quick to clutch their pearls. This is a good album for those people. But if you know someone who is and you don't like them, you could give them this.
Did you hear her her version of this with Dolly?
Yeah.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
And I liked the lyric change better than
the one that's like the others.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's better. I think that should have been the original lyric.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Dolly on that song, it was unique.
I didn't hate it though, because she also has that same kind of breathy tone.
Yeah.
It sounded a little creepy. It worked. I liked it.
But anyway.
But I like anything Dolly. I mean,
yeah.
I give Dolly a pass on a lot of things that are pretty cringy.
For sure, yeah.
So, yeah.
But anyway, short and sweet.
Okay, I'm not going to do pop, maybe ever.
Well, we can't get the girls either of those albums.
So nope. We are
nor
going
the new one.
To
the new T-Swift.
Go all the way back to, I should have looked this up, 1972.
That was weird.
Yeah, let me check here. Yes, ho! Ben with the trivia. Got it. I had mentioned in a previous episode that this was probably coming, and it's Deep Purple's Machine Head.
Put that on my misheard lyrics.
You're just trucking
right now.
You're just trucking to different places in the solar system, in the galaxy. But this album is a masterclass in virtually every instrument, and virtually it is, whether it's the organ, whether it's the guitar, whether it's the bass. I mean, did you hear the drums? That was insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane. And then, obviously, we all are huge fans of Ian Gillan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just his ability to go from those uppers to the normal, just chest registers so effortlessly is just phenomenal. And then there is the historical relevance of this album, because this is... You can get some of it with Led Zeppelin as well. But there's this transition from bluesy rock to hard rock to the, you can tell it's the very foundations of what would be metal music. And then you still have where what Deep Purple has that maybe Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin don't do as much as the organ, which was quintessential of the 60s rock movement. And they incorporate a lot of the organ and keyboard stuff, which then later could, which we do see in some metal bands and stuff afterwards, like Kiss, for example. Gene Simmons is you'll be some little ditties where he's on the keyboard as well. But this album, it's only 7 tracks, but that's because a lot of these songs are like 5, 6, 7 minutes long. Highway Star is probably my favorite song on the album. It was the one that I really wish y'all would have included on the 90 and a 35 album. I will probably get caught speeding listening to Highway Star. That was Space Trucking. It does have Smoke on the Water, which is one of the most iconic guitar riffs of all time. But you have some really bluesy stuff like Lazy on there. It's just a absolutely phenomenal album, start to finish. And it has, I think, some historical relevance because of what it shaped moving past it. So for me, I feel like if you don't have a Deep Purple album and you consider yourself a hard rock fan or a metal aficionado, then having the godfathers of that style of music should be in your repertoire. And so that would be, I think you need to have Zeppelin, Sabbath, and Purple. And of all the Deep Purple albums, this is the one that I think is the best top to bottom, would be Machine Head.
It's a good one.
So we're back to Heather.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to throw it back a couple of years from Chapel Roan to the debut album by Van Halen. Always going to find a way to get him in there, I guess. It starts out with this track. Wrote about this album, the still amazing thing about Van Halen is how it sounds like it has no fathers. Like all the great originals, Van Halen doesn't seem to belong to the past, and it still sounds like little else despite generations of copycats. And that it set the template for how rock and roll sounded for the next decade or more. You talk about no skips. Like I can listen to this album top to bottom, and just every track is as good as the next. Right after that, you have Eruption, which is iconic, going into You Really Got Me. The side two starts with Jamie's crying. I think that I found my theme in my list. I really like a debut album, And I think I thought about that. Why do I tend to like debut albums so much? And it could just be that I really like to see what an artist does when they have no, they've not been put through the machine. You know, they just come out, they have their style, they have their message, they have what they want to say, and they put it out there, and it's before the industry takes you and molds you to what the current trend is, or they just make you do the same thing over and over and over to wring that money out of you. I guess I feel like a debut album is, I like that raw, new, fresh ideas. And so I noticed that four of the five of my picks are debut albums. So,
well, we talked about that before, that, you know, sometimes these bands are together for 6, 7, 8 years writing music together. They get their first big break. The debut album goes huge. Well, that's their best songs collected that they've written over a 5, 6 year period. Yeah. And so, okay, it's a success. Now write 10 more in the next 5 months.
The pressure,
So, I mean, when you curate a list of maybe 100 songs that you've written together and you've culled it down to 8, 9, 10, whatever for an album, and you had 6 years to write the album, now they want another one recorded and ready to print 11 months later. I mean, that's, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but, you know, it's the business.
There's just something kind of magical, I guess, to me about that first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My second, stick it to your relative that you drew that you didn't like, album is Wide Open Spaces by The Chicks.
This is a really good album.
It is.
I don't think
so. Actually giving them a gift, a real gift.
I don't think they were The Chicks when they released it.
They were not. First album with Natalie Maines as their lead singer, the more controversial figure, outspoken of them, that kind of got them in some hot water in the early 2000s. It was
after 9/11, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. It's their breakthrough album from 1998, yes. and it blends contemporary country with some more traditional influence. They are known for including the fiddle. I don't remember the other girls' names, but one of them does play the...
One's Emily. And,
yes. And they're sisters, right?
Yeah.
The Emily other ones are sisters, and they're cousins with Natalie.
Something like that.
Yeah. The other two, they play instruments and stuff. And
They play instruments and stuff.
Fiddle, banjo.
They're doing that stuff.
There it is again.
There it is. Folk, country, rock, bluegrass. They have the fiddle, the banjo.
Marty.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Sorry, my brain is going a few different places, but it's interesting musically. They have really good harmonies, very strong. And then, like, You Were Mine is on this album. I love that song. Yep. Like, I've never been through a situation like that, but it almost makes me weep. Like, she's very emotive in her vocal delivery, and that's... The interesting thing about Natalie Maines, she's not necessarily my most favorite female singer. There's something a little bit unpleasant about her voice, but she does have an ability to deliver an attitude. Like, she can be very bold and, you know, in a song like this one that we just listened to, or in You Were Mine, or Traveling Soldier, or something like that.
Goodbye, Earl.
Yeah, Goodbye, Earl. So, and it really is a classic album. It showcases their strengths, and it blends all of those genres, so it appeals to a wide range. So, if you know somebody who likes storytelling, strong female voices, or girl groups, 90s country fans, this was huge in the 90s. And especially somebody who likes bluegrass instrumentation that kind of tends that way, I think they would appreciate this.
I'm not really down with cancel culture in general.
No.
Because I think that you miss out on a lot of good art, you know? And so I think, I mean, this, their career, it did a number. On their career. And, you know, I get it. Vote with your dollars, whatever. Do what you want to do. But I feel like I think we miss out on some really good art when we just
for don't, a person don't having, buy it. Right. Just for a person having an opinion in this case, you know, just because you disagree with what they think about something that's not even music related. Yeah. Then you could just keep scrolling.
It mystifies me. I don't know that I personally have ever even quote unquote canceled. I don't know that I've refused to buy anybody's art because of their personal opinions on something.
I think so. I mean, there are some people who have been canceled that I'll be like, let me turn up Ignition by R. Kelly, and like, he did some really bad stuff, really really bad. But I will still listen to some of that stuff. Because I like the song, and that, like, and that's not okay for some people, and that's,
I mean,
that's
it's your choice. A valid I'm not choice gonna pay. If that's what you want, if that's what you want to do, if you want to, you know, that's totally fine.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. I just,
but I guess expect everybody else to not ever listen to them again, and for them to no longer have a career.
So. Right, that's kind of an annoying to me, but.
Anyway, that was my second pick.
It's a good one.
All right. I'm going to stay country.
Okay.
I'm going to stay country. I'm going to go more recent, which is, this is odd for me to be more recent than y'all. In fact, I'm going to make a prediction that this is the most recent album that will be selected during this episode.
Okay.
Whoa.
It was released in September. Sean is looking at me like it's crazy. But because it's
just making sure I got the right thing.
This album was released posthumously. Is that right?
Posthumously. Yeah,
that's the word I'm looking for. It's Waylon Jennings' new album, Songbird.
Well, I'd like to love you, baby.
And it's classic Waylon Jennings.
My other baby too. To put my arms around you, that's all I want to do. If the sun don't shine tomorrow, I know I got you. And I'd like to love you, baby, and keep my other baby too.
So it's classic Waylon Jennings. And The way this album came to be is his son Shooter, who is really a very good producer, a country music producer, found a lot of demos that were completely unheard that his dad had cut with his signature band, the Wailers, during his prime from the mid-70s to the mid-80s, and was able to take those demos, remaster them if necessary, go in and lay some tracks over the top if there was a really bad area that needed to be fixed. He would go in and fix it, but there's no AI, and so every note that is sung is really Waylon Jennings from an old demo that he had cut with the Wailers. And that's so cool. It's called Songbird, and the first single is actually written by McVie of Fleetwood Mac, and is a remake of Songbird by Fleetwood
that's
Mac.
It's a great song.
Oh, that's, I love that song.
And so that was the lead single. I particularly like this song just because it is classic Waylon Jennings. I'd like to love you, baby, and my other baby, too. but if you, there are so many country music fans that desire for that old traditional country music to be made again, and we're not getting that out of Nashville right now. You can get it out of independent artists and underground country artists, but the big wigs in Nashville are not producing traditional country music. And so if you've got a Waylon Jennings fan in your life, or an old country music fan, outlaw country, this is a really, really great gift. Or if you are, I would say, a son giving a gift to a father, or a father giving a gift to the son, based on the story that this mm-hmm. album represents, between Shooter finding the old demos of his dad and putting it together, I think would be. And now, I mean, obviously they're gonna want to like country music, but if you got a Waylon Jennings fan, this is a prime opportunity to get them a brand new Waylon Jennings music.
That's cool.
And so, and I have listened through it, and it seems like you're just transported back to 1978, getting a new Waylon Jennings yeah. album. So, that's my pick. It's called Songbird, Waylon Jennings.
That's cool. I had not even heard of that.
Mm-mm, me either.
Okay. Heather. Yeah. All right. So this is certainly not a debut album. It was actually an album when this band was in the process of breaking up, and they had another obligated album to put out. So it's probably my favorite live album. It's Eagles Live. Mm. It is from November 7th, 1980. It's a double album.
There are stars in the southern sky. Southward as you go. There is moonlight and moss in the trees. Down to Seven Bridges Road.
So this is about the only place you can find.
Seven Bridges Road.
Yeah, Seven Bridges Road. So I think one of the elements of the Eagles that obviously sticks out to everybody is their tight harmonies. And if you've seen them live, they are studio quality vocals, harmonies right there in front of you. They don't miss. They do not miss. And I've been lucky enough to see them do this song live as well. And I mean, even years later, these are tracks from Hotel California and The Long Run. So it's just hit after hit after hit. I mean, it's just winner after winner after winner. And I guess you could call it a drawback. I don't really consider it a drawback, is when you listen to the Eagles live, it's not going to be that much different from listening to their studio album, because they're just that good. Mm-hmm. But there are a few little, little tweaks that they make, and but it's just a neat combination of those two really, really great albums. And to hear the crowd response. And so if you like a good live album and you really want to see, you know, how to do it live, they're just about the best to do it when it comes to recreating. And I mean,
I think we played Life's Been Good on the Turkey album. And that's on
Eagles Live also. Yes. Yes. And I love that particular, the live version. I love it. And I guess, I don't know when it was when I saw them last. The last time I saw them, it was with Vince Gill and Deacon Frey. And it's still great, but it's not... It's not like getting the opportunity to hear the original lineup, which I did several times. But it's stunning. It's when you've listened to albums so many times, and you kind of have that, you know where every ooh and ah and breath, and I mean, they just, it's so tight. Yeah. And I respect the precision that it takes for them to do their thing. So if you want a great live album, which would also be another good podcast to do, is great live albums. This will
make the list,
definitely probably. Show up on my list. Eagles Live.
Yeah.
Go get it.
My next album is Bad by Michael Jackson.
Ooh.
Okay.
Of pop music history, certified 11 times platinum. With this album, Michael became the first artist to get 5 number ones from one album. I Just Can't Stop Loving You, Bad, The Way You Make Me Feel, Man in the Mirror, and Dirty Diana. And Dirty Diana is like one of my favorite Michael Jackson songs. Yes. It's so good. Like his vocal on that. And it's so cool. It's so dark and gritty. It's a different tone than a lot of other stuff that he ever put out. That kind of showcases one of the cool things about this album. It has a range of genre influence, pop, dance, R&B, naturally, as you would expect from Michael Jackson, but rock and funk elements as well. He co-wrote and co-produced all but 2 of the tracks, so it's got his personal stamp and style on it. It's confident, more aggressive than his earlier music. It's hard to follow Thriller, but he did deliver on that with just timeless music, just another album full of hits. And even like the deep cuts, deep cuts on this are great. So it's great for a collector or anybody who likes pop, R&B, dance. I mean, I would say Michael Jackson is a great gift for any person, unless you just don't like popular music at all. You know, I don't know, like he's so accessible and enjoyable by so many different people. I feel like you can't really go wrong with a Michael Jackson album.
Who would you be ticking off with this gift?
I would say like super sensitive, we need to cancel everybody type people, just because of the accusations and all of that. You know, some folks are anti Michael Jackson have some problems with them now. So if, you know, there you've probably got some family members who have expressed dislike for, you know, allegedly what happened. So you give it to them. And you're welcome for letting you listen to Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Here's someone that a lot of people don't like. So this is kind of
Christmas turkeys.
Yeah, this is a lot of people don't like Eric Clapton for his political viewpoints.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, yeah. And this was an album that became very popular when I was a teenager. It was during the MTV Unplugged series, and one of my favorite albums of all time is the Eric Clapton Unplugged.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Eric Clapton is a phenomenal guitar player. I mean, he's one of the greatest guitar players of all time. And if you want to really narrow that down into the blues rock guitar players, he's even elevates higher to the top of the list. And but what the Unplugged series did for you younger folks out there that may not know about the Unplugged series is they had to use... Well, what they did is they unplugged their electric guitars and plugged in their acoustic electric guitars. Right. Right. So they were playing acoustics, and so that was the rule. So if, you know, the bass players were supposed to be playing acoustic electric or maybe stand up or whatever. And so there was some interesting stuff on there because, like, Nirvana's was really, really good, too. And there were several, actually, that were... They were pretty good unplugged albums, but this was
Kiss was really
Jagged good. Little Pill.
Yeah, and this required somebody who was known for electric guitar. That's what he's known for, is playing the electric guitar to kind of strip everything down to the acoustic level. And I'm going to tell you, his acoustic version of Layla is incredible.
Yep,
absolutely incredible. And this album actually kind of relaunched a resurgence of Eric Clapton for my generation. And then we get My Father's Eyes and Save the World and all these other kind of songs that come after that. And he kind of has a resurgence, and it all gets piggybacked off of this album. But it is just top to bottom. It's an acoustic guitar gold mine, and taking songs that were of some kind, either they were meant to be bluesy rock, but now they've kind of been stripped down to acoustic, or in some cases like Layla, which is really, I mean, that's just by God rock and roll, and really stripping that down. It's just absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Every single track on it is good. And he kind of was able to kind of dig deep, actually, and find some songs that weren't maybe his top 10, 15 all-time songs and incorporated them into the album and made them famous and enjoyable for the rest of us. So if you love guitar, particularly acoustic guitar, or you know somebody that does, this would be a great album for them. Unplugged, Eric Clapton.
Yeah, and, you know, for him to watch him, you know, with the accompanying, you know, visuals that you have, because, you know, you got to watch the show, and to watch him in a live setting do Tears in Heaven, which had to be
heart-wrenching.
Just, you know, I don't know how he did it, because this was relatively soon after the death of his son.
This was the album that Tears in Heaven was released on. Mm-hmm. And so this may have been the debut performance of Tears in Heaven. Mm-hmm. This may be the first time it was ever heard. And so some of you may not know the story. We probably should tell the story of what Tears in Heaven is about. Eric Clapton's child.
I think he was four.
Yeah.
He was a little child.
Fell out of the window of a tall building, mm-hmm, and died. And the song Tears in Heaven is basically Eric Clapton asking, are we going to know each other? Are you going to recognize me when we get to heaven? I mean, it's a heart-wrenching song, and deals with grief and hope all at the same time. So, heart-wrenching song, and for that to be your first performance, to be on live television.
Yeah.
I think they were live. Were the MTV Unplugged albums live, or were they recorded?
I think they were recorded, but they were recorded. I mean, they were still.
They had a live audience, didn't they?
Yeah. They had a live audience, yeah. It wasn't broadcast live.
Yeah, I think so.
And so, you know, there was no way to hide a mistake, because, you know, you couldn't have the album had to match the episode.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, so. And I would just recommend everybody kind of looking into all the Unplugged series, because there are some really
I don't know if you can anymore. You know, they took MTV off the air. Or it's going off the air. It's going off the air. December 31st.
Surely you can still find the Unplugged YouTube albums, right?
I don't know. I hope so. YouTube. Which makes me so sad.
Wouldn't it be great if another television station that was actually committed to playing music popped up? The music list channel.
Oh, Franginal TNL instead of TR.
So that's my pick. Is this the third round?
That was
third. That's my third pick. That's go out and get you some Unplugged Eric Clapton.
Okay, so my fourth pick is another debut album by an artist that we have determined was snubbed by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but was the beginning of a career that in pop music is very substantial. So this is 1990s self-titled debut by Mariah Carey. This is the end of the song, but so she comes out on the scene in 1990. Now, we've all, you know, we're fortunate to have lived in the time of Aretha Franklin and Whitney Houston and these amazing voices. So you would think that we would be a little bit jaded by, well, you know, we've got these great female singers, Ann Wilson, and, you know, I mean, people with big powerful, flexible, soulful voices. She comes on the scene and adds that layer, like she had those whistle tones, and people, aside from maybe Minnie Riperton, had not really heard that in pop music. And I remember the first time I listened to this album because I got it for my birthday. I remember mom and dad got me the CD for my birthday. And Vision of Love was already out on the radio and stuff. But like, all of a sudden you're hearing these notes and you're like, is that an instrument? What? She's doing that. And then you see it's in the time of MTV and you're watching her standing right there doing it. And it was just unreal. Her pitch center, she was just so spot on every single time. We hear other artists now, like Ariana Grande has whistle tones. Who else was I thinking of that?
I mean, JoJo did it a little bit in the 2000s. Yeah. Tori Kelly heavily influenced, but I don't know that Tori Kelly does whistle tones, so I don't know if I've ever heard that from her.
Well, the thing about Mariah Carey is that she's so flexible in every part of her range. Yep. Like when she goes, like you hear in that, like in that example, she goes way down into the basement. And then she just hops right back up so she can belt. She's got that really warm lower end. Then she's got the whistle tones. And there's some overdubbing, you know, in that song for her. You know, obviously, she's going to have to go in and do some of her own backups and stuff. But this whole album, I mean, just, it's just the beginnings of one of our pop divas. And it's stellar. Every track on it is good. I mean, she has her own style. She doesn't deviate much from that pop, soul, R&B flavored pop. But it's just such vocal gymnastics that are so well placed, so well thought out. Like, her runs are... Well, for one thing, they're pristine. They're just, every single pitch is perfect. And she doesn't just oversing every single thing. And she could. It would be very easy and very tempting to do that. But I think it serves the song a lot when she chooses to do those runs. So if you have not gone, because her second album was actually very, very popular. Emotions, you know, had tons of hits. And I think that some people don't go all the way back. And so if you really started listening to her with, you know, Emotions and Always Be My Baby, and those are great songs, but go back to the first album.
My fourth album pick would be for, let's see, if you're trying to be petty, I think it would be for the individual in your life or your family who, similar to the way that someone might be offended by Sabrina Carpenter or something like that, or, you know, that might take offense to someone running around in only a sock, as we have talked about in the last episode. It's Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication.
Great album.
Double album.
Blood loss in a bathroom stall. A southern girl with a skylit draw. A wave goodbye to Ma and Pa, cause with the birds of shed. With the birds of shed, it's so lonely of you. Soft spoken with a broken jaw. Step outside, but not to brawl. And autumn sweet wind, call it fall. I'll make it to the moon if I have to crawl. And with the birds of shed, it's so lonely of you. And with the birds of shed, it's so lonely of you. And with the birds of shed, it's so lonely of you.
One of their defining albums, their best-selling studio album. So musically, as Red Hot Chili Peppers does, you're mixing funk, rock, alternative, which is fun musically, but they also address some, you know, themes like death, the dark side of fame, escapism. You know, there's some depth there and makes you think a little bit, and you can have some conversation about the lyrics and the songs. So maybe you could give this to a listener who needs to like branch out, or they're interested in, you know, and then you can still have those conversations with your, like your parent, you maybe not give it to your child, but like, you know, a younger, I say younger, maybe like, you know, and still a young adult.
Yeah.
Give that to them, and then you can still talk about the music, talk about the lyrics, and so they've got hits on here like Scar Tissue, Other Side, Californication, so it's a strong track list.
The first six tracks are crazy good.
Yeah.
Crazy good.
Yeah. And and it's also a good collector's album. Somebody who, whether or not they're a fan of Red Hot Chili Peppers or not, it's a staple album, I think, in alternative music.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've, out of all of my albums, my vinyl, there's probably six or seven that I go to a lot. You know, like sometimes I'm just flipping through them and I'll be like, oh, I want to, that sounds good. I'll put that on. This is one I intentionally go to put on the turntable. Mm-hmm. Number one, it's a double album. So you get more bang for your buck. If you want to go all the way through an album, you're going to get more time with the album. Number two, it's just a great freaking album, you know? And so this is from one of my favorite bands. This is my favorite album from one of my favorite bands. So 100% agree. I'm going to give you another double album.
Ooh.
From another one of my favorite bands. And it's one that I did not like that much when I was in school, but has grown on me in recent years, and that is Smashing Pumpkins' album, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. Vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyer. A double album, it is a massive double album. A lot of double albums will have 40 minutes on each side. There's an hour of music on both sides of this album. Okay, I say that one of them's got 58 minutes, one of them's got 64 minutes. That is a lot of music for 1 hour, and some of their biggest hits. Tonight, which was my senior song was Tonight, Zero. That was Bullet with Butterfly Wings, Muzzle, 33, 1979, which is also a great song. So am I going to say that they're all that good? No, there's 28 tracks. 28 tracks. You're not going to, I mean, I don't want to say it's a no-skip album, but it is a nearly no-skip album. But you get 2 hours worth of music, and I got to think about how I want to say this, because I don't want to be too hyperbolic about it. But I would say that it should at least be in the conversation for the best alternative album ever released. I mean, number one, Smashing Pumpkins are really good. Really good. They're very diverse. They hit on very real subjects. It's not just fluff. It's not just, oh, let's see how, you know, crazy I can be. Like there's some Green Day stuff out there that is very much, let's just try to be as punk and outlandish as we can possibly be, right? And you see, I feel like their musical depth, and this is really going to make people mad. I feel like the Smashing Pumpkins' musical depth is beyond, and their lyrical depth is beyond what like Nirvana was doing and Soundgarden was doing. Now, can he sing like Chris Cornell? No, he can't. But just the lyrical depth of Smashing Pumpkins is really, really incredible. And Billy Corgan's he's kind of a cool dude, honestly. He's got his he's got his hands in a lot of different pies.
Yeah, he does.
And he's not afraid to tell you what he thinks, but he does it in a way that can be he's you can tell he's matured. Back in the alternative, we're going to be kind of, you know, avant-garde kind of days. I mean, it was a little bit less so, but says it in a way that's kind of politically or tactfully said, you know, but has some strong opinions. You can like them or not like them. But this album, 2 hours. And here's the, if you like, even if they just like visual art, the art that comes in this package, it's incredible. What it's not just the cover of the album. There's art in the album itself, and so it is. It's really a special album, and I would recommend if they've got a turntable, I would recommend vinyl so that you can get all of the artwork that comes in the package in large. Big square print. Yeah. So, anyway, that's my pick. Fourth pick, Melancholy and Infinite Sadness by Smashing Pumpkins.
Okay. So, this is my last pick.
Last pick, last round.
Also, debut album. This is truly, truly a no-skip album for me. And I was obsessed with it when it first came out. And it is Tuesday Night Music Club by Sheryl Crow. This is the opening track. 1963, the day Aldous Huxley died. The song that really broke her out on this album was All I Want to Do. And so that's a fun, it's upbeat. It's a little bit different because it's a lot of almost spoken it's not really spoken word, but it's not very melodic, but it's got a really good groove to it. It's really not about anything. It's, you know, it's just talking about mundane things, and you go from that to Strong Enough, which is a great ballad. Run Baby Run is very gospel influenced. And she co-wrote every track on the whole thing. And it's an 11 track album with 6 singles. So, I mean, it was just hit after hit. I love Leaving Las Vegas. It's just, she shows a lot of versatility. And I always loved her story because, you know, she had spent a lot of years on tour with Michael Jackson. She was one of his backup singers on that Bad tour. And she was a music teacher in Kennett, Missouri. And, you know, she was just doing her thing and writing her songs. And, you know, I think she was in her 30s when this album was finally released. And it was just really cool to see a woman who was a great songwriter who had gone out there and just gone for it for a long time. And then she kind of just came back to herself and wrote her own songs and became really successful with it. And then, of course, she just blew up. And I think when it's all said and done, you know, 50 years from now, people will look at Sheryl Crow and really regard her as a very important singer-songwriter, female rocker. And, you know, she's not very... I don't think she's very problematic. She just kind of stays in her lane, sings her songs, but she's really written some great stuff. And, you know, this in the 90s, it was a great time to be a female musician in the 90s. You know, that's when Lilith Fair was, you know, all the rage. And of course, Jagged Little Pill, who I think was on my last No Skips list, came out as they were releasing songs on Tuesday Night Music Club for two years. So right on the heels of that comes Jagged Little Pill, and it was just a really cool time to like female singer songwriters. And if you truly like women who write their own songs and play their own stuff, this truly No Skip. So yeah,
now I'm going to hit you with possibly my pettiest pick.
Love it. What is it?
Now hear me out. We talked about this person in the last episode with the turkeys as well. So if you have a Sister Bertha better than you in your life, and you might draw them for, you know, draw their name, and you're like, what am I going to get this person? You should get them a gospel album. And I would say you could get her Jesus is King by Kanye West.
It really is a good album.
It is.
Stretch my hands to you.
Life like, this is what your life like. Try to live the life right. People really know you push your buttons like type right. This is like a movie, but it's really very lifelike. Every single night, right? Every single fight, right? I was looking at the gram and I don't even like lights. I was screaming at my daddy, told me it ain't Christ-like. I was screaming at the referee, just like Mike. Looking for a bright light. Seagull, what your life like? Riding on a white bike, feeling like a sight fight. Pressing on
so the beginning of the album, it starts off with a gospel choir. And a lot of the tracks, they just kind of flow right into one another. It's not like track to track. And the album itself is beautiful, too. It's this royal blue color, really pretty. But it's actually a good album. Like, it's not a joke. You know, he had that period of time where he had this spiritual awakening and he converted to Christianity. And a lot of people were like, oh, I don't believe it. And it's like, you know, just let somebody live. Why don't you just support them and see how it turns out? It turns out it didn't
it's not great, but like, but you could give him a chance. And in this period of time, I mean, he did write the theology that's in the album is solid. He's quoting scripture and not misusing it, you know. So I think it is a legit gospel album, despite the source being having questionable headspace now. But it's his ninth consecutive album that debuted at number one, which is pretty impressive as well. It also topped the gospel charts. It won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Christian Music Album and the Billboard Music Awards. It won the Top Christian Album and the Top Gospel Album. So, you know, whether or not you're trying to be petty, if you know somebody who likes gospel music, if you're a hip-hop fan, anybody who likes music in that vein, this is good music. Yeah. And it's not meant to be disrespectful, sacrilegious in any way. It happens that he's quite a character and he made a good gospel album.
Okay. Well, so what a way to end, to go from rap, hip hop, gospel.
Yep.
To rather ungospel-like country music. I think the current best songwriter in country music, in my opinion, is Sturgill Simpson, and his debut album, High Top Mountain, is one of my favorite albums of all time. This is called "You Can Have the Crown."
All my money on weed and pills, trying to write a song and pay the bills, but it ain't came yet, so I guess I'll have to rob a bank. I guess it could be worse, it ain't that bad. At least I ain't sitting in no Baghdad in the middle of a hot damn desert, sitting in a tank. Well, every time the wife talks, baby gets mentioned. I'm so broke, I can't pay attention.
That's one of my favorite lines.
Oh, it tears me up to see her cry. Spending all my nights on the internet, looking for a clue and ain't found one yet. Just a bunch of more cars, guitars, and other stuff I can't buy. Well, now, oh, you can hear me, won't you throw a damn dog on? Cause if the devil shows up with a bad deal, souls are going down.
You ready for that?
Well, I'm singing real pretty, singing real sad, and all the people in the crowd say you ain't half bad.
Maybe we can bleep that out later on in the editing stage. But yeah, what he says is, well, they call me King Turd up here on Beep Mountain. If you want it, you can have the crown.
Oh my gosh.
And there's just, oh, I love, that's one of my favorite songs. He says, I'm so broke, I can't pay attention. I mean, it's just a bunch of really, really good lines in there. And I mean, he's full of them, top to bottom. That whole album is just full of just really, really smart, intelligent, but funny songwriting. And it really relatable to poor people like me. You know, I mean, like if you don't have a lot of money, you can relate to a lot of what he says. And it's a lot of Southernisms that go along in there that, you know, people from down here will understand. And so here's who this album's for. If there are people in your life that are bemoaning the current state of country music because all the country music they hear is what they hear on the radio, and they want to know what is the traditional track that country music should have taken in the 21st century, post 2000, where it kind of went off the rails, who should I listen to? I would start with Sturgill Simpson's debut album, High Top Mountain. If they liked the country music from the 1990s, and if they liked particularly the music of the 90s with the attitude of the outlaw guys that came before him in the 70s and 80s. They're going to love Sturgill Simpson's High Top Mountain. So that's my fifth pick, Sturgill Simpson, High Top Mountain. This album came out actually like in 2013. He's best known for his follow-up album, which is it's either the second or the third one. He's got two. Meta Modern Sounds and Country Music is the follow-up to this one, and that's the one that kind of made him a star, but I prefer the debut album, which we just listened to a sneak peek. So that's 15 songs. Beth, did you write these down?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so if you haven't written them down, here's your chance.
Okay.
The 15 albums that we are saying you should consider for the music lovers in your life.
All right. Short and Sweet by Sabrina Carpenter. Wide Open Spaces by The Chicks. Bad by Michael Jackson. Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Jesus is King by Kanye West. Machine Head by Deep Purple. Songbird by Waylon Jennings. Eric Clapton Unplugged. Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness by Smashing Pumpkins. High Top Mountain by Sturgill Simpson. Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess by Chappelle Roan. Van Halen. Eagles Live. Mariah Carey. And Tuesday Night Music Club by Sheryl Crow.
All right. So now you have some great gift ideas. If you think you like this list, I would invite you to go back to a year ago and listen to the same episode that we had where we provided 15 other episodes. I could give you a cheat sheet, but then we wouldn't get a listen for it. So, so go back and listen to that. And hopefully out of those, you'll find some nice music for your loved ones this holiday. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with another Christmas episode, I think. Probably. Yes, surely. And surely so. It'll be Christmas related. Yeah. But we do hope everybody is enjoying this holiday season. Stay safe, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for joining us on the Music List podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.
She almost had it.